Half a century after walking on the moon, iconic astronaut Buzz Aldrin reflects on a lifetime of achievements and what he's learned through it all in his new book, No Dream Is Too High: Life Lessons from a Man Who Walked on the Moon. Buzz Aldrin speaks intimately and from the heart, sharing his experiences in space, in war, and as a public figure. Buzz Aldrin, best known for his Apollo 11 moonwalk, holds a doctoral degree in astronautics and at age 86 continues to wield influence as an international advocate of space science and planetary exploration. It is a great pleasure and an honor to welcome Buzz Aldrin back to our program. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing fine. Is this Joe I'm talking to?
It is Joe you are talking to. It's a great pleasure to have you back on the program.
This is Buzz.
Well, it's very nice to have you. So at what point you've written many books. You have talked about your thoughts on space and the space program. So what message did you want to convey in this volume?
That I'm a human being, that I have thoughts and objectives, and maybe if I could identify and categorize them by experiences that I've had in the past, people will maybe get to know me a little bit better than the dry list of achievements without reflecting on the meaning of perhaps some of these achievements. Perhaps some humorous and open-minded, but others more serious, they could perhaps lead to a bit more insight by the reader who says, oh, yeah, I know what he's talking about here. And that just reinforces thoughts that they've already had.
It is interesting because obviously, I mean, I even said it in the introduction. I mean, the subtitle of the book is Life Lessons from a Man Who Walked on the Moon. So we would think that so much of your life since that time has been impacted by that momentous occasion and that everything is a result of that. But you really point out in the book that it then comes to so many other decisions, so many other things that you do, that it is but just one door to open, really.
Well, I'm not the most varied or person with scattered objectives. I'm very focused. And I think without trying to formalize it. My objective in life has been to serve my country. Everything is moving toward making things better in areas that I believe I have some special talents, some special insight to contribute. I was just thinking about one area that hasn't quite been exploited fully, and that is the think tank that I hope to have formed and working soon. It's to point out the good things and perhaps the not so good things that have had an influence on the progression of our space program. And we really should pay attention to not falling into the same trap again by understanding fully the nature of the inspiring good things that we did and perhaps some of the things that brought us to the position we're in right now, which is not at all envious. We can't even launch our own people to our expensive space station. We have to rely on somebody else. Now, how in the world did we get there? Well, it's not something that is just in the last 5 or 10 years. It's perhaps a growing trend that has had an impact on where we are.
What do you think the result of that impact is going to be ultimately? That if we, to borrow a phrase in the title of the book, that if no dream is too high, if we decide to put that aside in our space exploration, what price do we pay for that? Or do you believe we're already paying that price?
Well, when I grew up, I just had the impression that where I was, what I was doing, and the country that I was a part of was just the greatest that I could hope for. And I think that's pretty well proven itself out through the results of our involvement in World War One. I was a teenager experiencing World War Two. Then I participated in, after West Point training, participated in the Korean conflict and followed very closely other military achievements. Of course, noting the dealings with the Cold War and how we were able to move beyond that through non-aggressive ways, but reminding people of peace comes through a recognized strength in those who are seeking peace.
You make a great point in the book. You write that people who say that failure is not an option are usually trying to motivate others to excellence, and you say that's certainly noble. But you also say that if you are afraid to fail, you'll probably not accomplish much in life. Imagine if failure were not an option for the space program, we'd have never gotten off the ground. What can we do? Go ahead.
That's certainly an observation. If you want to avoid any chance of things going wrong, don't take any risks. The phrase came from a situation with Apollo 13 where they did have a major problem, and now the task is to return them safely and do that without the opportunity for failure. So in talking to the other people in mission control, the flight director said failure now is not an option. We must succeed. It was to encourage everyone to do their very best.
For you, when you think of failure, those moments in life where you have failed, have they been real teaching moments for you and things that you've been able to learn from?
Well, I think we have to accept the hand that is dealt to us and continues to come along as not really choices, but as assignments to achieve and then to do the very best that we can to achieve that. And that we don't always get to write our own future progress. That comes along by somebody, some organization requiring or demanding performance, or it comes about by having an imagination that says, gee, I think we can improve this. I would like to give it every effort that I can. And I think I fit into the latter category when it comes to what should we be doing next in our space program? And that is to have a progressive, innovative, evolutionary program to achieve greatness in space by inspiring others. And clearly that objective is in the direction of the planet Mars. So we should do everything that we can to move optimistically toward the achievement of such an historic achievement as humans from Earth occupying and settling on another planet in the solar system. Just think about it. What can compare in the evolution of humans here on Earth than to actually permanently occupy another planet? You know, we can go to the moon and we can come back relatively easily, and so we will rotate back and forth people there, and I'd call that occupying. But when we permanently build up a settlement I think that's the challenge before us now.
How possible do you think that is, and I guess what would the timeline be, especially given the struggles that the space program has had over the last, as you said, 5-10 years?
Well, I think we need to unify our efforts, and that means to look upon the playing field as above the Earth's atmosphere, low Earth orbit and beyond, and we're aiming to achieve that through human exploration. We can send probes out to find information that will bolster our understanding of the universe around us. And we can do that with robots scientifically gathering in that information. But the inspiring nature of humans venturing outward is what inspires other human beings to think that this is the increasing level of achievement of the human race.
Do you think we understand, do you think we fully understand in telling this to people and getting people to sign up for this? Do you think that we're selling it right in the sense of letting people know, letting citizens of this country and the world know of what the possibilities are?
Well, the possibilities sort of are infinite, depending on how far into the future we look. And I think we ought to be aware of that progress that has brought us to where we are right now. We're not going to stay the same as we move into the future, but we do have capabilities right now that we're not fully exercising. And it is for what purpose? I think for the grouping of people called our nation, our country. And that has achieved a particular point in history for our inhabitants. And I think if we continue to want to advance, we need to continue to inspire not just the nation, but the rest of the nations in the world. And I think we'll do that by not competing with them, but by joining, cooperating, and assisting the progress of other nations. Now, in the case of going to Mars, we can continue to learn a good bit about those challenges by exercising activities at the moon. But if we expend all of our resources at doing what we achieved 45, 50 years ago, I don't think we're living up to our capabilities. We can certainly learn by doing things that we need to do at Mars and exercising as completely as possible without expending tremendous resources, which could be spent, but are not within our choice.
Right.
We have to budget very carefully, and I think that in general, in comparison to the 4% of discretionary funds that we allocated, or the government did, to the Apollo program in 1967, to think that we can begin to achieve great things like that with the measly 0.5% of discretionary funds. It's just impossible to be able to do that, and we will shortchange ourselves. So we have to allow looking beyond with positive, realistic objectives and not fall behind other nations, but give the capability to the so necessary results, I think, of maintaining that point of leadership in the world.
Buzz Aldrin's new book is No Dream Is Too High, Life Lessons from a Man Who Walked on the Moon. The book is published by National Geographic. Buzz Aldrin, it's a great honor to have you on the program. I thank you so much for sharing with us. Thank you so much.
Well, I've enjoyed being with you. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Again, Buzz Aldrin's new book is No Dream Is Too High. It's published by National Geographic. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.